This is Emily from the Oyster Pearl.
Hi, I'm Kimberly Bailey with the Joyful Home.
Hi, this is Denise Track of Creating Cadence.
Hi, this is Pamela from A Message in the Bottle.
Hi, I'm Jamie from Jaybird Fitwear.
Hi, I'm Bobby.
And I'm Tess. And this is the Etsy Success Podcast.
We're part of the seller content team here at Etsy, broadcasting from Etsy's headquarters in Brooklyn. The Etsy Success Podcast is your source for tips on improving your shop and for inspiration from your fellow sellers. Our goal is to empower, inspire, and motivate you to be the entrepreneur you want to be.
This podcast is powered by Etsy, where millions of people around the world connect to make, sell, and buy unique goods. Follow your passion and start your Etsy business today.
So today we're going to be talking a little bit about branding.
Yeah, when I look at a lot of my favorite shops, one thing that they all have in common is really strong branding.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something you don't always really think about when you're buying, but it's actually really important when you're selling.
Yeah, and that can actually be kind of difficult. You can appreciate it in other shops, but it's kind of hard to create your own and create a cohesive brand, especially if you want to sell a lot of different things.
Sometimes it just takes learning through experience or just trial and error. And that's kind of how our guest today found her niche. Arona Kunaraj is her name. She runs the Etsy shop Boucau in Toronto. Arona and her husband John opened Boucau in 2009, which was the same year that they launched a brick and mortar shop for their handbags. The couple also lives above the store, and they have two kids, Piper, who's now 8, and Liam, who's 11. Not only does Arona screen print and sew the bags in her shop, but she's passionate about painting, leatherworking, and punch needle embroidery. Boucau now has over 13,000 sales and over 100,000 Instagram followers. So thanks for talking with us today, Arona.
Thanks for having me, Tess.
So you have a pretty diverse set of skills. Where did that come from?
I think it's just from, you know, a natural curiosity. Ever since I was little, I was always interested in trying different things. Both my parents, they were both really crafty, and my mom, she made all of our clothes, and my dad would make things around the house. And I think, you know, when I was growing up, that was more sort of like necessity. We didn't have a lot of money, and so they would make things. It instilled in me that sort of love of making, and I do that with my own kids as well. Like my daughter, she loves it when I make her clothes, and we always do things together, and I think it's such a nice feeling to have things that are made by your parents rather than go out to the store and buy something that's like mass produced. When you kind of go back and forth too from like doing the different things that I do, I find like sometimes one certain technique will inspire the other. So I find like that's why I like to have a lot of different things on the go, because then you might be working on something and it's not really for anything in particular, but then there's something about it, an element about it that will inspire something else. Because a lot of my work like that I sell on Etsy are very neutral palettes. But then when I do the punch needle and the embroidery and the painting, I use really bright colors. When I first started, I did a lot of bright colors, and I didn't do well at all. And I found that the more I, you know, toned down the palette, the better it was for people, like the way they reacted to it. Maybe because people, when they wear a bag, they, like my customers, they don't want it to be flashy and bright. They want it to work with their outfits. And if it's neutral, then it goes with everything, right?
So what's the story of how Boucau began?
Boucau kind of started, I think, the moment I met my husband, John, in 2002, it kind of started from there. The name of our company is both of our last names together. So his is Booth and mine's Kunaraj. And we just thought, you know, if we named the company Booth and Kunaraj, it would sound like an accounting firm. And so we were just trying to kind of come up with a word that wasn't really distinctive of what we were making, because at the time we weren't really sure. And we kind of wanted to, you know, we both come from an art background and we wanted to kind of create utilitarian pieces. And so we kind of started like that, where he kind of does his own thing and I do my own thing, and then we do some things that are collaborative.
What is the inspiration behind your designs?
A lot of my designs, I always call them mark makings, kind of almost like random doodles, the way the process of making the patterns. The patterns had to always be created by like hand painting or hand drawing. There had to be some type of human element to it. And a lot of the patterns, I know it sounds like a cliche, but like from nature, even like in my social media, there's always a lot of plant-based type of images. Those are always inspiring to me, I feel. And then a lot of the more geometric patterns are really inspired by just things that you see around you, like in my urban environment. Like, you know, if I look at the, you know, the streetcar track wires, the patterns that those make, or even just patterns of windows.
Your shop has evolved a bit. So what have you learned about creating a cohesive brand?
When I realized it was starting to work better was actually when I limited how much things I sold. I feel like, you know, when people go to your shop, you have such a limited time of their patience, you know, so I was thinking to myself, well, what do I want to show them within that limited time? I make tea towels and I make pillows and I make all these things, but they're not my best sellers. My best sellers are always bags. So I'm going to just post bags because it just makes more sense to focus on the things that do the best. I always try to tell people, like, you know, when you're working on something, you just, you know, keep working at it and making changes. Don't scrap it because it's not working. And I think the more you work at it, the better it will be. Like for me, like for a lot of my bags, I think of them in terms of blocks, like the shapes are the blocks. And then the things that change are the patterns. But the blocks still stay the same. And then that way you're not trying to reinvent the wheel all the time. Then I try to have like a core group of things and then new things to kind of, you know, refresh the collection. A lot of the times people will say, you know, oh, so how do you kind of get it going and how do you keep it going? And I always say, I don't second guess myself. I just go for it. I've kept that sort of thinking, and I think that that's what's kind of keeping us going, that feeling of no fear.
How did you first react when you noticed some copycats or people kind of copying your work?
Well, I mean, it sucks, right? I mean, everybody, you know, everybody remembers the first time they discover they get copied, right? It could be something small, it could be something big. I think the first time my work that I, when my work was copied, like not my bags, but when I was in art school, was when I was, you know, working in ceramics, and somebody, after they pull things out of the kiln, they put your work on your table, and they put this piece on my table that looked kind of like mine, but it wasn't, because you know how you just, you know what your work looks like, and that gut feeling like, oh my God, someone copied something that I did. So my approach is quite different now when I get copied, because first off, when someone copies you, there's nothing really you can do. You know, unless it's a straight copy and they're, you know, a big company that you can do something about. But if it's an individual or something else, there's really nothing you can do. It's really an emotional journey to kind of, you know, approach people and try to get people to stop. So I've stopped doing that. When I start getting copied about something, I think to myself, okay, why don't I improve this design or something and try to make it different because they're already making something like that. And I find like that journey is always really beneficial because it keeps my work fresh, it keeps my work going, and I'm always trying to come up with new ideas and things like that to kind of keep, you know, I guess one step ahead, because you're the one who's coming up with these ideas, not them. They're just kind of always going to be one step behind you. And then eventually they realize how hard it is to kind of keep going at it, and then they veer away and do something else. Refocus on your work and try to determine what it is that you could change and make better. Competition and copiers actually keep me as a better maker. Like, so I actually see it as a good thing because it keeps you on your toes.
What have been the biggest challenges of shipping from Canada?
I send all large things with tracking. The only way I change that, like if it's somebody from, you know, Australia or Europe and the cost of shipping is a lot more, it has to be someone who's purchased from me before or who has no issues with shipping. And then I'll send it for the unregistered shipping. But I found that in the end, it's less headache for me to have something that has tracking and insurance for the customer. You know, they can't say they've never got it or that you've never shipped it because you have proof that you shipped it. Like, I think it just solidifies that relationship. And I feel like if it's sent without tracking and insurance, like, and they don't get it, you don't know if they got it or they didn't. Like, you know, it's just, I feel like I've had so many issues in the past with that. And I found that ever since I added registered shipping for all my orders, I've had less issues. You know, you want that process to be easy. You know, we use like the postal service, and I mean, I feel like that's a reasonable price compared to like if you use a courier. But I mean, if there's small items, we just send it letter mail. So I want to have that insurance so that if they don't get it or if something happens along the way, they get their money back. But I think the price difference is like 8 and 15. So it's not that huge of a difference. It is a huge difference for somebody from Europe or Australia. But I mean, that's a given. They kind of know from ordering, they're ordering something from North America. Customers that are further away, I actually find that they spend more money because they're buying gifts or they're buying for friends so that they make it worthwhile for all that shipping that they're paying, right? So I always find it's better to charge them more, and then if they want it to be sent unregistered, then they'll contact you and then you deduct, you give them back their money. People have a better understanding that way. You should just do whatever is best for your business. And I think that having things with tracking and insurance is best for your business because it just makes a better relationship with the customer.
So you launched your Etsy shop and the brick and mortar store the same year that your second child was born. So what was that like?
It was really difficult because I was 8 months pregnant, and we were trying to get our building up and running for the Christmas season. And then I was also working at a job and then trying to kind of keep all of our online sales up to date. The way I approach things is like, you know, when you're looking at a piece of cake, trying to eat the whole entire cake at once, it's too much. So I was just trying to like eat one slice at a time and take it day by day. And that kind of helped us get through that. And so I was like, you know, like I was doing everything I could because we didn't have a lot of money for renovation. So I still remember being like 8 months pregnant and then like sitting on a milk crate and pulling out thousands and thousands of nails from the floor.
Oh my God.
And just doing everything I can to kind of get it going. And like the first thing that they had set up was the studio space so that I could keep working while there was like renovations going on around all of me. So it was kind of chaotic.
Yeah.
And then at the time we were trying to also live here because we couldn't afford to have like a separate apartment. So they had this one room for us that was like sealed with plastic so that no dust would get in there. I remember sleeping on like a mattress on the floor and trying to get up every time was so hard because I had this huge belly.
Oh my goodness.
It's kind of comical, but it's nice. I think like those kind of experiences kind of gives you good memories about when you start something. I think the moment we were able to have a bathroom, that was when we could live here. So like we were really pushing them to like get like the bathroom like done. We were using like a hot plate and a microwave. So you can kind of get through without a kitchen, but you can't get through without a bathroom. But yeah, it was, you know, it's one of those things where you're living through it and it seems kind of crazy. But then afterwards you look back, you're like, oh, that wasn't so bad. As well as, you know, trying to get like our shop going and try to get the online shop going. We also do craft shows. And so I was at this craft show at Christmas time. It was like around November. This guy from a newspaper came by and he saw one of my little animal softies. And he's like, oh, I really like this. I'm going to put it in our gift guide. A few days later, I was getting emails and phone calls from people. And they're like, yeah, I want to buy this. I saw it in the Globe and Mail. And then we just started getting sales on them. And at the time, the storefront window, it got damaged. And so we had to replace the whole thing. And it was crazy expensive. And we were like, where are we going to find the money to pay for this? And then the sale of all these softies basically paid for it. And I just remember we had people over and they were all stuffing. And I would be in line, you know, with a toddler, super pregnant, with bags of stuff to send to the post office and having people give me dirty looks because they had to stand behind all these like bags full of things that we had to ship. And we always tell people that the storefront window is paid by this beaver softie.
That whole year keeps getting more insane as you tell me more about it.
I know it's funny. I blanked it out, and then as I'm talking to you about it, I'm like, whoa, how did I survive all that?
When you were going through that time of being pregnant and getting everything ready and just in this state of flux, did you ever feel like giving up?
No, definitely not. I think if anything, it pushed us to go further and harder because we were so determined to get it up and running and then get everything somewhat settled before like baby number two came. I remember someone saying to me once, you don't want your life to be all about the kids and you want the kids to be part of your life. So when both my kids were born, I always made them part of our lives. If I'm sewing and they're sleeping, they'll be sitting in a little, you know, basket beside me at the sewing machine. And they're always kind of in and around our lives rather than us changing our lives to reflect what they're doing. And then it's made my kids really adaptable. They're very independent and they're both very creative. So I feel like that was like a really good decision. We just made them like, here you are, you're part of our life. This is what we do. And you're going to be doing that too.
Now it's time for the lightning round, where we collected questions from the forums and the Etsy Success social channels. So are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Michelle from Tulip Studio says, I would love to get a sense of how you decided on your pricing.
I calculate how much the material cost is and how much time we spend on things. And then I usually either double it or triple it. And that's usually how I come up with the price. So if like it's something, it all kind of accumulates to like worth $20, I would end up charging it online for $60. Because you also want to account for the cost of, you know, the fees. And then also the cost of, like, for me to have, like, my employee even to, like, wrap the things, and then the cost of shipping materials. And then you kind of also can base your price on what else is out there in the market. So if you see something that's very similar to yours, how much are they charging? Are they really established? Are they starting out? And where do you fit within that range? You might want to be in the middle. You want to be closer to the higher side. So that's usually a good way to kind of gauge prices.
Kara and John Witham from Secret Safe Books ask, how often do you introduce new products? Is it a long process to make a new design?
Oh, I try to introduce new products very often. Like I would say, I think at one point I was doing it like every week, but I think it's just I naturally am interested in things, so I'm always trying out new different things. Sometimes I offer things as like a limited edition rather than something that is going to be a long-term thing, so you can make like 20 of something and that's all there is. And I think that kind of keeps your buyers really interested in what you're doing because they get excited because they're like, you know, there's only 20 available and I'm one of the 20. And so that's a good way to kind of break up when you launch things.
So last question. Union Jewelry Design asks, if you could narrow it down to your top three most important tips for success on Etsy, what would it be?
To have good customer service. Sometimes the customers are not always right, but I think that it is a business and you do need them and, you know, respond to inquiries even if they're a little nutty. Always try to maintain that professional relationship. I think that that's huge. Try to do work that is true to you. Try not to do what's trendy. Make sure you make work that is true to who you are, and I think that that will always make you stand out. And I think the third one would be try to have a positive outlook and just try to take situations that may seem kind of bad and try to look at it in a positive way, and that will keep you motivated. I think that when you start lacking motivation, that's when your shop starts to look like it's not interesting to others. And I think that if you keep that interest and keep that positivity, that comes through in your work and in how you present yourself.
Well, thanks so much for joining us and sharing all of these great stories and tips with us today, Arona.
Oh, you're very welcome, Tess. Thank you for having me. It was really fun chatting with you.
A while back, we asked you what you like best about running your own business. Well, Davina of Fluid Ink Letterpress had a pretty unique take on the subject that we wanted to share with you. We hope you enjoy her submission as much as we did.
One of the best things from working from home is having your own schedule and setting your own schedule. I am definitely not a morning person. While in the mornings I check all my emails and do all sort of really basic admin stuff, once I get home from dropping the kids off at school and doing all of that sort of stuff, I come home and I can sit and have a nice long cup of coffee. It's great. So I could... Oh, excuse me. Yeah, babe. Yep. No, I haven't paid Telstra or called them yet. Yeah, it's just, you know, it just takes a long time. Yeah, I know. No, I haven't got your deodorant yet from the shops either, no. Your password for what? Your pass. Yeah, so, like I said, you get the morning to yourself. You get to do what you want. It's great. One of the main reasons I chose to work from home was that I could devote and dedicate time to my kids. So I can drop them off in the morning, I can pick them up in the afternoon, and we can work through our homework, go on excursions for them, which is, you know, just a fabulous experience. It's something... Just a sec. Hello, Davina speaking. Oh, gosh. Right, is he okay? With a ball, just a basketball. Oh, no, I'm sure he's fine. There's, right, a bit of blood? Okay. Just, is it a nosebleed? Nose. Oh, look, he bleeds from the nose all the time. I'm sure. Do you hear that? Silence. I like to work in silence. It's nice. It's silent, and it means that there's no one around to disturb you, and you're all alone, and there's no one to talk to or bounce any ideas off, or no friends. Don't wanna be all. Also nice to take nice walks outside in nature with the dog. It's a lovely stroll. There's a nice park right near where I live. A little bit of time to clear the mind and relax. So, oh God, Otto, you've already done a poo. Now I have to pick the bloody thing. Look, I've got another half an hour before I have to pick the kids up. I've completed zero of the tasks on my to-do list today. So, just going to bang out some emails here. Do a bit of printing probably. Not much time to just start there. Working for yourself is not all it's cracked up to be. But to be quite honest, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Be sure to keep an eye on the forums and on the Etsy Success social channels for ways to participate in a future podcast. That's it for this episode. Thanks for joining us. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate us and leave us a review. We really appreciate it. And remember to subscribe so you'll be the first to know about new podcast episodes.